Welcome to Star Wars by the MRC Tech, the mini version, where Sean will bring you bite-sized episodes to enjoy throughout the week. So sit back, relax, and welcome to the galaxy. Episode 19, everyone, and welcome to Star Wars by the MRC Tech. I am your host, Sean, and we are happy to have you as we travel through the unknown regions. We're recording on May 11th, and because we know your time is precious, we're going to be creating bite-sized portions of this podcast for you to enjoy over the course of the week. Normally a lengthy episode, we're going to trim it down to short and bite-sized versions so you can listen while you wash the dishes, take the dog for a walk, or clean the cockpit. Star Wars by MRC Tech goes bite-sized for the next few weeks, so sit back, enjoy the quick-hitting episode, and let's cover the agenda. On episode 19.1, we're going to be covering our hyperspace spot, and it is chock-full of good news for you. So listen up, fam. EA announces a new franchise. I wonder what it could be. Lego Star Wars Skywalker Saga has its release date. We travel to the TV shows where Dave Filoni gives an update on Rebels Season 5. We have new Kenobi rumors and a special exclusive Mandalorian potential announcement for Season 2. In segment 19.2, there's a little Twitter discussion going around concerning Sam Witwer and Luke from The Last Jedi. We're going to be discussing that in detail. We're going to recap some of the Rise of Skywalker Jr. novel and all the cool details there. And we'll finally wrap up with our Disney gallery reaction so far. If you're new to the podcast or you need a reminder, you can support the podcast through donations using PayPal. Support the show so we can maintain equipment and bring even better content to you. Head on over to themrctech.com for more information. If you like game streams, come on out and join me as I play through a series of games on Twitch. We're live streaming on Twitch as we speak, MRC Tech. Twitch.tv/MRC Tech. Follow the channels, like the page, join the chat, have fun. That's what it's all about. During this pandemic, we want you to be entertained, and this is just another way to distract yourself from the craziness out in the world. So without further ado, let's jump into the galaxy. Welcome to a special rendition of Into the Galaxy, one of an older segment from the last podcast, which just encompasses a lot of variety of different discussion points I'd like to bring up to you today. So welcome to segment 19.2, the second part of episode 19. Hopefully you were able to give episode 19.1 a listen. It is the top news and most recent news from the past week in Star Wars. And hopefully you enjoyed that. But this is a little bit different. This will go in a little bit different directions. First, we're the agenda today. We're going to cover some interesting tidbits from the Rise of Skywalker Jr. novel. We'll talk about Disney Gallery, the new show up on Disney Plus. And then we'll sort of just chat about a very interesting discussion on Twitter involving Sam Witwer. And we'll talk about who Sam Witwer is, if you don't know who that is. And we'll sort of just try to keep a light and airy discussion. Then we'll open up comms chatter for any kind of requests, questions, or rebuttals and comments back against the current topics. And we look forward to hearing from you on Star Wars by MRC Tech. So without further ado, let's dive on in to the Rise of Skywalker Jr. novel. So far since last week, I've gotten up to and I've read chapters 1 through 9. And storyline-wise, if you're familiar with the Rise of Skywalker, Rey just shot out lightning from her hand and blew up the transport, and our characters think that Chewbacca is dead. So I'll be kind of jumping back and forth in this book. I know last week I sort of read the prologue. I'm trying to do a better job at pulling out these passages as I read, but I sometimes don't have a pencil. So I kind of go backwards in time and try to mark some things as I go. So I was working a little bit backwards today as I was trying to find some passages to tell you about. So this sort of happens in chapter 7, which I thought was very interesting because it connected to another story called Black Spire Outpost, written by Delilah S. Dawson, a book that I've mentioned on the podcast before. And basically, here's the passage. It says, Kylo Ren strode down the corridors of the Star Destroyer Steadfast, which served as his flagship after the Resistance had damaged the finalizer at the Battle of Batuu. How you like that little Easter egg nugget? We get a mention of Galaxy's Edge's Batuu. We get a mention of the final battle. And that's exactly what happened at the end of Black Spire Outpost. So I love that continuity between this junior novel and something else. As we continue on that chapter, this is where Kylo Ren has the severed head of Bulio, and he's bringing that character to the Supreme Council. And what we have here is a little bit of extra information on General Pride, which is helpful. Because as you know, my feelings on General Pride is that I just don't think he was a well-developed character. But this helps. Only Allegiant General Pride's loyalty did he not question. This is Kylo Ren. Having served in the Imperial military, Pride had spent his career championing the Empire's authoritarian methods of domination and oppression. He believed in the First Order's supremacy with a religious zeal. So that's a very interesting description of General Pride. It's kind of nice to see that. We also have a little bit of setup for Armitage Hux. And he, you know, Kylo Ren basically dismisses him as the spy early on, saying that he'd die before betraying the First Order, which is kind of interesting in its own right. Then we have General Parnady, who you wouldn't know who that is. You know why? Because that's the guy that gets force-choked and gets killed. But basically, there's a little bit of more interesting information given. General Parnady went right into logistics. We'll need to increase recruitments, harvest more of the galaxy's young. Not Parnady is the one that gets killed. It's General Quinn. First, Ren said, I need the scavenger. And then this is General Quinn. Respectfully, sir, but your preoccupation with the girl is maddening. Well, that didn't happen in the movie, General Quinn said. We have more pressing issues. This fleet, what is it, a gift? What is he asking for in return? Does that mean, boom, force choke to the ceiling? So I thought that was very cool. Making our way in the same chapter, we cut over to Rey. Her and Beaumont Kin are looking through the Jedi books and texts. They're trying to interpret them. They're trying to find Exegol. And Beaumont Kin sort of divvies it down to Passan in the Midian system. And Rey says, so Leia will start the search on Passana, Rey says. You will start the search on Passana, says Maz Kanata. And then there's this nice little dialogue between Rey and Maz back and forth. Rey says, the dark side has plans for me, Rey said. If I go, Kylo Ren will find me. Maz said, you have faced him before. It's not him I'm afraid of. Maz plopped her goggles over her eyes as if trying to see more of Rey. After a long look, she offered up another riddle. To find the darkest place in the galaxy, you will need to face the darkest part of yourself. You must go. The Force has led you here. You must trust in it. Always. So that's a very nice little scene between Maz and Rey, something that I don't think happened in the actual novel. So that is one thing that I picked out that was a little bit different. Moving into Chapter 8, Rey scanned the Passana Desert with quadnoculars. So they made it to Passana. The crew's there. They're making their way to the Akiaki Festival. But we have this little inner dialogue from Rey, which I found to be very interesting. Before meeting BB-8 and Finn, she had roamed such desolate stretches on Jakku for hours, sometimes even days, alone. Always alone, lost in her own thoughts, scavenging for whatever might be of worth, rarely ever seeing another form of life. And when she did trade in the scrap she'd found, she didn't stay long at Nima Outpost to socialize, unless an off-worlder had a good story to tell. Mostly, she went back to her abandoned Imperial Walker to be by herself. She spent those cold and quiet nights researching old legends, practicing her piloting skills on a simulator, or gazing at the stars and thinking of her parents. She pined for the day they would return and take her away to somewhere pleasant, somewhere she could truly call home. I think that's great detail about Rey's character in The Rise of Skywalker. Those in the movie don't get that. Reading the book, you get a lot of interesting tidbits when it comes to the different characters. As I sort of scroll through this book, there will be a little bit of a time jump. And one thing in Chapter 9 that I found to be interesting, Rey held up her lightsaber. This is kind of when they're in the sinking fields and they get sucked down into the Vex's lair. Rey held up her lightsaber and took the lead. The tunnel was circular in structure with segmented ridges, as if something had burrowed through the ground. She remembered a story a trader in Jakku had once told her about a sand serpent called the Vexus. It dwelled in Pisana's desert and was generally peaceful unless provoked, but if it was, you can count your mortal breaths, the trader had said. Rey didn't recall anything about it living underground. However, that's one of those details that it's like, well, who give? I mean, now we're just trying to connect things just to connect things. I'm not really interested in knowing the history of the Vexus and whether or not Rey knows. It makes Rey feel like a know-it-all. Like she kind of has, she has an idea of every little strategy that goes on in the galaxy. And that's not right. She's sort of innocent and still is learning about some stuff. And I would have preferred her to have a more naturalistic, instinctive connection to the Vexus through the Force rather than, oh, I heard of a Vexus before and whatever, whatever. So that's just a few short passages from the Rise of Skywalker novel. As you can tell, I mean, there's definitely interesting information in this book. I highly recommend it. It's a really easy read. I'm flying through it. I'll probably bang out some chapters tonight and start actually marking passages as I go now that I have found my handy-dandy pencil. I'm going to keep that in the book, and we'll be able to bring a couple more passages to you next week, and I might even be done the book by then, and I'll give you a little mini review of it. So thanks for listening to the Rise of Skywalker mini recap, and let's now move on to something a little bit lighter. Disney Gallery. That came out May 4th. The second episode dropped a few days ago. They're not very long episodes. They're about 30 minutes in length. Maybe even a little shorter, but it's a behind-the-scenes looks of the creation of The Mandalorian, and it's basically just a round table with some highlights strewn within. And the two episodes I've watched, and I've only watched them one time, and I can tell you right now, it is one of those shows that you'll have to rewatch and rewatch, because I've been hanging on to these directors and creatives' words. And it's just truly amazing the influence of Star Wars and how it has had an impact on a lot of people. And if you haven't watched the original movies, a good place to start is Rogue One. Then you can go into 4, 5, and 6. And a lot of that influence from the 77 when it came out all the way to 83. I'm not even born then. I was born in 88. I saw the movies on VHS, fell in love. Then the prequels came out in 2000, and that's when I saw it in the theaters and was all about it because I'm only 12. I'm 11, between 10 and 12. And then I see Revenge of the Sith in 05. I'm in high school. And then for 10 years, there's nothing. No movies. There's Clone Wars, and that's it. And then The Force Awakens comes out. And it's just like, what a far-reaching franchise. 42 years of awesomeness. And just to hear these directors talk about their experiences and how they brought it to the table. And Favreau basically created a team of people that had to work together but also put their own personal touch. Highly recommend episode 1 of Disney Gallery. Now, in episode 2, it sort of covers a couple themey sort of things, but there's a wonderful story that Dave Filoni says in that show that basically, you know, he really truly understands George Lucas and where his vision was going. Dave Filoni will be helming. I imagine Dave Filoni will end up being the president of Lucasfilm in due time. I know he's not done telling stories. He did a wonderful job with Clone Wars. He did a wonderful job with Rebels. He truly understands the Star Wars universe. I actually watched a nice, I think it was on the Star Wars show in this past, the last Star Wars show that came out. Dave Filoni and George Lucas sat down with someone else who was interviewing them, and they were literally just talking Star Wars, just chatting about their time together, how they influenced each other. I actually started watching American Graffiti. I've never seen it. It's George Lucas's first movie. I don't know why I haven't seen it, but I'm going to sit down and watch that movie. It's from 1962. Oh, it's based in the 60s, and it's one of the most influential movies out there outside of Star Wars pop culture. It's one of the things that propelled George Lucas to do what he wanted to do. So, yeah, I'm excited to watch it, but I mean, just definitely got to watch Disney Gallery. What's nice is that they're only like 28 to 30 minute episodes. They've got really cool insight into it. And the fact that Mandalorian Season 2 is on track to debut in October tells you everything you need to know about how well-organized that TV show is, that production is. And Jon Favreau, God bless his soul, he's not even a Star Wars nerd. He's not even a super nerd. But he knows creative juices. And he's trusting this team to lead the way. And don't get me wrong, Jon Favreau knew Taika Waititi before signing on to The Mandalorian. He hired Taika Waititi as sort of a interview to see if he could helm his own Star Wars movie. You're damn right. If Taika Waititi didn't get that Star Wars film because of how he handled The Mandalorian. And I couldn't be more excited for the future of the franchise. You know, we're 3, 4, 5 years away from another theatrical release of a movie. You know, they're 100% taking a backseat to all that stuff, but that's a good thing. So, we've got Mandalorian to look forward to. We got the Kenobi series to look forward to. We've got the female-led centric Star Wars show that's coming out in the near future. A lot of good stuff coming out, but definitely check out Disney Gallery on Disney Plus. And finally, we have our interesting discussion of the night, which is basically, we're going back to 2017, and this is a discussion about The Last Jedi. And we're not going to spend too much time on the discussion, but I'm just going to allow you, I'm going to play this clip from Sam Witwer. Sam Witwer is the voice of Darth Maul in The Clone Wars and Rebels, and he was also the voice in Solo. So he's, in my opinion, a Star Wars authority in terms of he understands the lore. And I want you to listen to Sam's thoughts on Luke in The Last Jedi.
And I always felt that Luke Skywalker was
the epitome of not giving up.
Yeah. 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 So I did not necessarily agree with that version of the character. Yeah. I was like, that's just Han Solo, we saw his cynicism. So can you make me believe off screen that Han Solo becomes a guy who would run away? Actually, yeah, I can kind of wrap my brain around that. Yeah. That's not as much of a leap. But Luke Skywalker, the George Lucas movies, the long independent film that he made.
Yeah.
Last thing we saw was a guy who had the level of compassion that it would take to throw down his weapon in front of his mortal enemy and declare, I'm not going to fight anyone.
Yeah.
I won't hurt anyone. And I'm certainly not going to hurt this man, my father. You failed, because this is what a Jedi is.
Yeah.
I am a man of peace. That guy doesn't ever for a moment think about murdering his best friend and his sister's kid.
Yeah.
He doesn't think for a moment. And furthermore, if he did mess up, he's probably going to force Skype that guy until he answers the phone and say, hey, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So we've learned about Skype. So that's
which is also kind of reflected in the fact that Kylo doesn't really sort of present his true menace either. You know, like he is a guy that still seems to have
a lot of conflict.
Yeah. Conflict internally. Exactly.
By the time we're with Vader in episodes 4, 5, and 6, he seems pretty not conflicted.
Yeah.
He seems pretty much like, I'm Darth Vader, yes. Okay, that's it. Yeah. And Luke's like, I don't think you are. He's like, okay, but I'm Darth Vader. Yeah. And he looks like, I don't think you are. And then Kylo Ren, who's like, I don't know who I am. And Luke's like, yeah, man, he's lost. I don't know. I've got to go and hang out. I've got to find the first Jedi temple so I can hang out and die.
Yeah. Sam, what? The movie's hitting the movie's home video.
So it's very curious, and I don't disagree with them. And I don't disagree with them on the first watching of The Last Jedi. I know for a fact that when I saw The Last Jedi for the first time with my dad, when he threw the lightsaber over his shoulder, I was like, what the hell is going on here? And then as we find out his story and how he is a hermit and he's depressed and he's failed the galaxy, you know, for me, I'm like, this is very, very, very bizarre. This is not the Luke Skywalker that I expected. Now, by the end of the movie, when we see him come back and become that legend of the galaxy, you know, I had me and I wasn't bawling my eyes out, but, you know, with him fading away to the twin suns on Act Two is very, very, you know, emotional for me. So I responded. I quote retreated this, you know, and Red 5 over Scarif. The Scarif podcast put this out, and man, did it blow up. You're talking about 756 retweets, 3,600 likes, and just my little retweet got 2 retweets and 2 likes, and it's got decent impressions at 314 with 10 engagement, you know. And I can imagine they're getting a lot of traction from this. And I put my 2 cents in. So here's what I said. Luke's arc in The Last Jedi is pretty dynamic. We find him broken, which is not where we left him in Episode 6. Then we see him come back to that legendary idea at the end of 8. Did I want him to demo his mastery of the Force by taking down the First Order? Yup. But I didn't mind his strategy by the end. Now, of course, that's 140-ish, 100 and how much? 220 characters? 240 characters? 280 characters? Who knows? I forget how much Twitter gives you now. But it's true. I wanted to see a Luke that was just so powerful that the First Order would have been decimated. But what we got was a lesson. We got a lesson during this time. And something that somebody wrote a nice thread on Twitter about it. And I want to 100% read it because he did such a good job at explaining it that I sort of retweeted it myself and started following him because I thought what he wrote was just really, really fantastic. And, you know, one thing I'm going to kind of read like word for word what he said, and it's at AD_Strider. But while we're on the topic, and none of what I'm about to say is directed at Whitwer and anyone, I'm just exploring it now. One of the sticking points seems to be this. There's a read that Luke tried to kill Ben or thought about murdering him. This interpretation, which is valid, imparts a lot more rage and darkness onto Luke as a character. It inherently latches onto what frightened Ben Saul. He is the fans. He's every child that grew up with Luke as their hero because he actually did, and that definitely clouds things. And then there's the read I subscribe to, which is that he thought he might, sadly, have to strike down his nephew. And these reads are different things. That thin line distinction is important. This read stems from the pressure of heroism, the weight of the legend, and his duties. Because if Ben had become the evil Luke sensed, would it not be Luke's duty to protect the galaxy from him? Or even Leia's duty, since we now know she was also full-fledged Jedi Knight? These are the questions we have to consider, and this is the source of the hero's shame. It's shame and self-loathing over the fact that what heroes do has now brutally clashed with what family does, with what a mentor does, and very clearly with the dark side. The dark side can't be shrugged off in one moment. It's almost an addiction metaphor here. If Luke casting the saber aside in Return of the Jedi was the last time he'd ever have to brush with the dark side, then is it even a compelling threat? Here we see him stop it from clouding his mind, more successfully than in Return of the Jedi, where he was hacking away at Vader for a minute, I might add. To be a hero is a constant battle, which is something that all Star Wars, Lucas, and modern era has emphasized. We see it with Ahsoka. We see it with Ezra. We see it with Rey and with Ben Solo, who finally makes the right choice and dies for what is right. It's always in motion. Now, with all this in mind, communication is key, and that's where Luke and Ben's relationship fell apart. Not because of an ignited lightsaber, but because their choices in the moment prevented conversations, reconciliation, rehabilitation, or what have you. So it's a lot less simple than just saying, what would the fully realized Jedi Luke want to do here? The question is, what would the galaxy's last Jedi have to do in the face of an evil he knows and loves? An evil that threatens to destroy the peace he thought they'd achieve. Especially now that he is the Obi-Wan Kenobi who failed an apprentice. Obi-Wan did what he had to do on Mustafar. He made his choice and now Luke faced his. And for fans to expect it to be cut and dry is a tad odd to me. And then he defeats him peacefully with love for him, saying he'll always be with him just like Han, which, as we know, plants the seed of what Ben would experience in The Rise of Skywalker after the Death Star 2 duel. That's all. I legitimately love discussing The Last Jedi. And I think it's an awesome take, and I said as much, and I followed him, and I think he's absolutely right. I'm not saying he's the only right person out there, but I'm thinking that is a great take on The Last Jedi and Luke's character, and I'm happy to discuss it further with you. In the show notes, as always, you can leave me a message on anchor.fm. You can leave me a message on Instagram. You can leave me a message through your notes and send me an email at sean@mrctechllc.com. I look forward to discussing this with you. I want to get a little bit more interaction with the show. I look forward to hearing your thoughts. And if you ever want to come on the show and discuss some things, feel free. I've got ways to get your voice on the show, and we'll make it happen. This has been a great discussion. We're a little bit under 30 minutes, which is awesome. I love the fact that I get to talk Star Wars with you, and I love the fact that Killa Cam FO makes an appearance in the stream right now, and he gets his debut on the podcast, episode 19.2. Looking at you, Cam, and thank you for listening. And as they say, in a galaxy far, far away, may the Force be with you. Star Wars by MRC Tech, created by Sean, found on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, can be streamed from mrctechllc.com. Follow Sean and MRC Tech on all the socials. Search out MRC Tech and you will surely find them. Catch all the exciting Star Wars action in a podcast form. But don't forget, MRC Tech also streams content like games and Lego builds and is also a tech specialist. Reach out if you ever need help. Music provided by Incompetech, the Baltic House Orchestra, Pandemics, and ChillHop.com. Copyrighted 2020. Cheers, and may the Force be with you.